Well, Killer Honey, we had a good relationship going, but it's for the birds now, cause here come the Colonel! Woo!
Yeah. Don't you just love it when the comedians from the Comedy Central auditions down the hall come in here and disrupt a serious science program? All right, welcome back to the second half hour. The Promise of Tomorrow. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason. And we're going to get back to our very enlightening guest, Paolo Shakarian, the major U.S. Army at West Point, absolute expert in cyber warfare, with some astounding things we're going to learn about the future. Will you stick around to the end of the program? Right now, though, let's step over to our fountain of useless information, root around with a coin jar, and for today's query.
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help
you? Yes, we've awakened the spirit of the fountain because we've thrown in the coins. The magic coins always loosen him up. All right. Oh, spirit of the fountain, Thanksgiving's coming around again. And, of course, the only anthem that we know for Thanksgiving, that I know of for Thanksgiving, is, of course, Alice's Restaurant.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
Yes, you're doing a fine job there of an impression of Arlo Guthrie. So we know that you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
Yes, I know, we've been there. But there is one thing, O Spirit of the Fountain, that you can't get at Alice's Restaurant. What is the one thing? You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant, but what is the one thing you cannot get at Alice's Restaurant?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
Aha! Old Spirit of the Fountain. You can't fool the Spirit of the Fountain. Yes, the very one thing, the only thing that you can't get at Alice's Restaurant... What? That's Alice, of course.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Excepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. At Alice's Restaurant.
Okay. All right. Let's get back to our program. He is Paolo Shakarian, co-author of a book on cyber warfare, An Introduction to Cyber Warfare, A Multidisciplinary Approach, published by Elsevier. On this program, we do kind of like to look to the future a little bit. I'm riveted with your chapter on the power grid, something that we cover a lot on this program. We've been talking about it for a number of years, about the vulnerability of the power grid to anything from just regular blowing up the power grid and physical attacks on power generating facilities, and then you point out about the vulnerabilities of the power grid. You talk about the Aurora project that actually blew up a diesel powered electrical generating plant, I think, and please clear that up, and everything. And so I want to expand on this as we can. Explain the Aurora thing a little bit for us, and then let's talk about the vulnerabilities of our power grid.
Okay, so the idea with the Aurora test that the Department of Energy did, which most of the information was classified until some reports they released. So they did the test in 2007, and they some of the scientists released reports from the test a couple of years later. I think they were like 2011 and 2012, some of the reports came out. And essentially what happened is they connected this generator to a computer network in a way somewhat resembling how grid components are connected to IT systems. Mm-hmm. And then they set about trying to destroy the generator through cyber attacks. And basically the strategy of the attack that ended up destroying this particular generator put the frequencies that the generator operated with out of sync with the frequency of the grid. And it did so in a way that it would push it out of sync in a manner where the normal sensors that would try to detect this kind of thing would be too slow to detect these little bit of phase changes.
Sure.
And, I mean, that's abstracting a lot of details, but that's essentially what happens. So, the system would check if it's out of sync, and it would see it's not out of sync, and then the computer software would push it out of sync in a little bit of time between checks, which would cause things to, break. And then it would quickly restore everything back to normal before the next check, and the next check would think things are fine. And if it does this enough, it's going to cause the whole thing to break. So that's essentially what happened with the Aurora test. Now, the reason why I find this concerning is that this demonstrates the vulnerability of some components of the power grid. However, a given component failing in the power grid is not going to be cause massive damage. It'll cause limited damage, and likely there's some redundancy in the system. I think what should be more of a concern is if an adversary were to target certain key parts of a power grid in order to engineer something like a cascading failure, like what we saw in the eastern United States in 2003. And I think that scenario is something we should be very concerned about.
Well, you talk about in your book that cascading failure that we saw started in a small area in Ohio, but it cascaded to such a point that it shut down, the East Coast? Is that the one you're talking about, or are you talking about the one in California?
I'm talking about the one on the East Coast. Because essentially what happened was it caused the sensors on the power lines to believe that they were going to become overloaded, so they caused certain lines to shut down, and then this led other lines, a shift in how the power was distributed to cause the same sort of failure to happen on other lines, and it all happened very fast. So this type of and in this case it wasn't a cyber attack, but it was a tree falling in Ohio on a power line that initiated this failure. Now, one thing that people who don't believe that the power grid is susceptible to an attack will say is that the power grid in the United States or even North America is very heterogeneous. It consists of so many different components that for an attacker to take it down, he'd have to do reconnaissance and understand way too many things in order to be successful at pulling off this kind of attack. Okay?
Okay.
However, what was demonstrated by the cascading failure that initiated in Ohio is one single line failing caused this huge, massive cascade. So if a cyber attacker is savvy and he can model our systems properly, he can identify a certain set of key systems that if he knocks those out, it'll cause a massive cascading failure. And like I said, these cascading failures can happen very quickly because of, parts of the system, the human is not in the loop, and the power lines get shut down and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a very much concern because the heterogeneity of the system will not save the day if the attacker only needs to attack a small number of components.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned that it's so complex that a simple hacker, a single person with limited funds and ability to do this research probably couldn't take it down in any big number and accident. But when you were talking about Stuxnet, you did say that had to be a very sophisticated government or corporation or somebody with deep pockets that was able to put that together. Well, if they can put that together, then it is quite conceivable that they could put together what it takes to cause us a cascading power failure in the United States. Isn't that the case? I mean, like a country, like one of our adversaries on the world stage, like maybe China or Russia or any of them.
Yeah, I believe it's certainly possible for someone to do that. It's like this. In the 90s, no one thought, a lot of people who thought that Stuxnet wasn't possible were citing the complexity of the system as the barrier for such an attack being pulled off. And today, the people who think that a cascading power failure cannot be engineered by conducting cyber attacks are citing the same arguments. And I think, again, this is this is almost like security by obscurity. This is saying, well, our system is so complex, no one can figure it out. Well, I mean, the history of science, as we know, is littered with problems that are very complex, and someone or a smart group of people who, you know, have good funding and stuff, end up figuring it out and changing the way we think about things. And I think the power grid will be no different. I think it's very possible for an organization with deep pockets, such as a nation state, to conduct the necessary reconnaissance, cyber reconnaissance on our power grid systems, and do other forms of intelligence gathering to create a reasonable model of how it works. And then on top of it, they can devise a method to attack certain key components in order to engineer a cascading power failure. This is not outside the realm of possibility if someone is, if some organization is willing to make an investment, and likely this investment, compared to, you know, other military spending, say things like, you know, fighter jets and nuclear weapons, would be much less expensive, in my opinion.
Well, right at the moment, major electrical distributors, like here in Dallas, Encore and some of the other ones, use various different sources for their electricity. I mean, did it come from solar? It comes a lot from wind. Now there's, of course, gas-fired power plants. There's nuclear. There's Comanche Peak, just not far out of Dallas. Other places are all feeding the electricity to this distribution company. Now then, where these junctures come in, and you and I discussed this a little bit offline, and I had asked you to please be prepared to address it today, where these junctions connect and come in, those could be the very vulnerable areas where such a cascading power failure could occur, don't you think?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, by introducing more complexity into the system, you know, some people could argue, well, you're making it more difficult to attack. But at the same time, if you're working to understand the system better, it might also provide the attacker more opportunities, as you suggested. I think, you know, we have done experiments here on simulated data using some data sets on the power grid, where we modeled these kind of attacks with a much simpler model, and we have found even with multiple sources of power generation, an attacker is still able to create significant cascades. So yeah, we think that these additional sources of power, while, you know, in some respects it might add resiliency to the system, we don't think it's anything an adversary can't overcome, and perhaps in some cases it could yield additional targets of opportunity to the attacker.
Let's even get more simple than that. Let's say, right at the moment, I have friends that are collecting solar electricity, photovoltaic, wind, and have really a, they're off the grid, so to speak, as far as getting electricity, but they're feeding electricity to the grid, reversing their meters and actually getting paid for supplying electricity. Why couldn't one of these junctures be a place of entry for somebody wanting to start a cascading catastrophe like you're talking about?
Well, I mean, what would happen is that the sources of power actually wouldn't be the ones who are targeted as much as transmission stations. Mm-hmm. So what would happen is the transmission stations and the transmissions lines have only a certain amount of capacity. So if you take out certain transmission lines, the power sources will get diverted in other paths. And once these power sources are diverted to other paths, those paths might then start to exceed their capacity, because now those paths for the power have to handle more to carry things like, you know, this guy collecting solar power.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how the cascading failure, you know, in the models we're examining would look to happen. Once these other lines, they exceed capacity and they fail, then there will be other lines that may have been previously below capacity, but now they have to handle this extra power flowing from these sources because the other ones have failed, and they fail. And then so on and so forth, and it causes, as I said, a cascade.
Well, Paulo, it's impossible to cover all the stuff that you have in the book. It's also good, and I want to just impress everybody by that. An Introduction to Cyber Warfare, a Multidisciplinary Approach by Paulo Shakarian, and Jana Shakarian and Andrew Rureth. And I wonder, you know, is there some sort of a summary that you can give us, since we can't cover every chapter of the book, but maybe what have I missed?
Well, I think, you know, some of the important things to note is that, you know, denial of service attacks are something we're going to continue to see more of, especially as different organizations, both criminal and probably a few nation states, they're trying to build infrastructure with armies of compromised computers so they can leverage large amounts of traffic against various targets. And we're seeing this with some of, you know, the hacking groups that have been affiliated with Iran have been doing against banks in the United States.
Sure.
I think another area of concern that we address in the book is the theft of intellectual property. And this is something that, you know, very many companies in the U.S. and Europe have had intellectual property siphoned away by Chinese hackers over the last decade or so. And this is going to continue to be an area of concern and something important to understand. And then, of course, as you know, we've been talking, the understanding that infrastructure attacks are possible and something that we're going to continue to see various organizations attempt to develop capabilities to perform. And we might even see actual attacks against these type of targets, you know, in the next, you know, decade or so. I wouxn't be surprised if we see another Stuxnet or maybe even something worse.
Well, if a hostile state wanted to inflict a military attack on the United States, it would certainly be to their advantage to shut down a large portion of the electrical grid, because all of our computers and all of our communications and everything else would see sudden catastrophic failure. So this is, I would think, a very burning issue for not just the commercial power companies, but for our entire government operation.
No, I would agree. You know, the whole key with why cyber warfare is of a concern is that countries around the world, particularly ones that we regard as adversaries, they view this as a way to asymmetrically attack the United States. Because developing a cyber capability, they can look at you know, enhancing computer science and information technology training and education within their countries to develop a cadre of guys who are smart about computers, which is something that you can't stop a country from doing because it has obvious civilian implications. And then setting up research labs to explore cyber warfare, you can't detect those like you can a nuclear enrichment facility or someone trying to build a you know, aircraft carrier, which has a big signature.
Yeah.
Someone building a cyber warfare capability is easy to hide and honestly is a lot cheaper. And this is not to mention, of course, that adversarial countries, before they have a cadre of very smart people in computer science and information technology built up, they can rely on, you know, say, criminal hacking groups and folks like this to fill the gap in the meantime through, you know, off-the-books type agreements. So this is a very serious threat for our country, I believe.
And we're always playing catch-up. It isn't like something we can do proactively to prevent it. I mean, we can try and we can do something. People can always come up with something that's more clever and hit us from a different angle. Isn't that one of the big concerns?
Yeah, well, so one of the concerns with cyber warfare is that it's what's called offense-dominated. So it is much easier to create offensive technology in cyber warfare than defense, especially in, you know, with, so taking a step back, if you think about cyber crime, a cyber criminal is primarily motivated by profit, and he's looking to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So a cyber criminal, if you harden your system with normal defensive measures, he's going to bypass your system because he's going to look for someone that's easier to compromise.
Okay.
However, with regard to cyber warfare, an adversary such as the nation state or a very large and powerful organization, think like, you know, maybe a terrorist group or a malicious corporation or organized crime, if they want to compromise a specific system they're going to make every effort to model that system and identify vulnerabilities until they get what they want. And this is much harder to defend against, because if you just keep building walls, the bad guy is going to keep building larger, taller ladders.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we're going to see real results on this is when things like policy and the legal system, especially at the international level, kind of catch up. And I think this is particularly true with regards to things like intellectual property theft and denial of service against commercial entities. Once we have a better international legal framework to deal with these, where the perpetrators can more easily face punishment, even if they're in other countries, then we might see a settling down of cyber warfare. Until then, I think it's likely going to get worse.
Well, Paulo, your book is riveting, and this conversation is riveting. I'm sorry we have to bring it to an end, but we're going to have to. Before we go, can you give maybe a look into the future? Put on the meditation cap for a minute. Look 5, 10, 15 years down the road. Where do you see this all going?
Well, I see where I see things going is that attacks are going to get more sophisticated, because I think there's more countries starting to invest a portion of their national budgets in cyber warfare, and I think things that we have not thought to be possible in the past might come true. I think one thing we're going to see in the next decade is we're going to see at least one or two attacks against physical systems that originated from cyberspace that will be more that will cause more damage than Stuxnet. I'll go ahead and take the risk and make that prediction. We'll see at least one or two of these type of attacks within the next decade. And I think the other thing that we'll see in the next decade is we'll see several incidents of major corporations reporting security breaches, where the security breach, where the infiltrator has been present on their system for a period of years, as opposed to, we just found someone stole, a database worth of social security numbers. We're going to see reports of companies having the report that, hey, our systems have been infiltrated for like 3 years, and a lot of our data, when we don't even know how much of our data has been stolen. And this is going to cause a lot of consternation in things like, corporations' annual report and investor confidence and things like that. And I think those are going to be some big areas we're going to see in the next decade.
Wow, what a scenario. What a cautionary scenario and a tip off of the things we're going to have to pay attention to. All right, Paulo Shakarian, the author of An Introduction to Cyber Warfare, A Multidisciplinary Approach, a major, and with the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science and Network Science Center at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, New York. Thank you so much for being with us, and we just deeply appreciate you taking the time to bring us up to date on your book.
Thank you very much, Colonel.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Everyone is important. And no matter where someone sits today, building relationships and promoting goodwill and staying true to your word serves you throughout your career, serves you throughout the life of your company. And so, I guess if I had a word of wisdom, it would be that you maintain and manage your relationships with the utmost integrity, and that you keep your word, and eventually, talking to a secretary, that secretary next day may be chief of staff for a senator. You just never know where someone's going to end up. So behaving well and behaving kindly in everything you do is extremely important. Christina Tanasichuk, CEO and founder of the Government Technology and Services Coalition, Oakton, Virginia.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.